Being Charlie Kaufman.
Like, that's a liability thing now.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to do it.
You can watch it on TV. You can watch Dr.
Pimple.
You can watch Dr. Pimple Popper. If you want that kind of realism.
Oh, you've never seen that? Did you pop in pimples?
Yeah, it was this lady on YouTube.
A dermatologist?
She's a dermatologist who, like, pops massive pimples on YouTube. And it had such a huge following. Because people inherently are fucking disgusting.
Like her patients' pimples?
Yeah, or like whoever came in to see her. They were like, hey, Dr. Pimple Popper, I got this massive fucking boil on my shoulder. Can you give it a go? And she was like, yes, absolutely. Then she started filming it, which is fucking weird. Then she started putting it on YouTube and people started watching it. And now it's a TV show, Clinton.
People love that stuff.
And anybody out there who likes that kind of thing, you're gross. Just fucking go home and be less gross than you were yesterday.
Please. Hi, everybody.
Hi, everyone.
I'm Clayton.
I'm Jordy.
This is the Props Cast.
Welcome home.
Welcome home to Smoky, BC.
Oh, God. I kind of like it, though. I'm not going to lie.
Can you hear it in my voice?
The smoke?
No, I'm kind of wheezing a little bit just because I had the window open on that all night.
Okay. Sucks to your asthma.
Just a little bit.
Going to have to start calling you Wheezy again.
It's not that bad.
I kind of like the smoke. I don't know why. I'm weird.
It's way thicker today than yesterday.
I think it looks cool. When I was a kid, the first international trip I ever did was to Thailand. And we went to Bangkok the first night. And I'd never seen... And Indonesia was on fire at the time. Like, completely. Like, Australia was this year. And all of Bangkok was like... You know, the pictures that you're seeing of San Francisco?
Yeah. That's like that orange...
That's what Bangkok looked like to me at the time. And I just thought it was like that all the time. And it looked like I'd never seen anything remotely like that. And Bangkok is kind of a crazy old, like futuristic, weirdo kind of city and to begin with. You know what I mean? So I was like, holy fuck. So forever that will be in my mind.
Have you seen the memes of San Francisco and it's all orange and it's like
Roger Deakins
and he's with the guy rubbing his
hands. I love that meme. That meme is so funny. Go back to that well.
Seabus memes has a good one of all the Vancouver. There's one, it's like tourists at Stanley Park and then it's the goose. Oh, yeah. It's like got its tongue sticking out, rubbing its wings together.
I like Seabus memes too.
Seabus memes is funny.
Yeah. Memes are great.
Memes are great.
I feel like that needs to be written. I feel like, or it's coming where Seth Rogen or somebody of that nature is going to write a show where their occupation is a meme writer.
Yeah. It's right? Just a matter of time.
Yeah. Because it's like a quirky, but is it a job? Like, do you get paid for it? Or will it be copyrighted ever? That's coming, everybody.
Yeah.
Meme copyright.
Well, I know that the election has been trying to get memers to work for them.
Yeah, and so is Vancouver Health, like Coastal Health or VG Health or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have like meme writers that come in and like make COVID memes funny.
Oh, we can get the young crowd to listen to our message.
I mean, there's got to be some validity to it, though.
No, totally.
Right?
It's just like in the 90s when everyone was doing raps and sitcoms.
Because all you go to find is what people are going to buy into, right? Mm-hmm. Like as if young people aren't easily bought. Like Gen X and millennials, right?
And Gen Z.
Exactly. I don't know, man. This whole crazy fucking fire thing, it is sad, though.
It's super sad.
But I like the overcast is what I like.
It's super sad, and we can relate because our province is always on fire.
Yeah, we know exactly.
Is it on fire this year?
We've had a good year.
We had a good year, didn't we?
We had a somewhat contained fire year.
Lucky.
But it's coming.
It's coming.
It's for the rest of our lives.
It's just going to burn twice as much next year.
It's for the rest of our existence.
Yeah.
Because there's less and less snow and less and people seem to think that it's not global warming. And
yeah. And then there'll be less trees for less oxygen, more CO2, less snow to make more fires.
Yeah. Less water, less resources. Yeah.
Easy.
But hey, fuck whatever. Economy, right?
Yeah. Got to get that economy going.
Oh boy. Okay. So seen anything lately?
We're going to talk about a few things for the topic.
Yes, we are.
Fuck. I didn't even think about what I watched that wasn't part of the topic.
Well, I feel like in these times where we're watching a lot of TV, it's like you watch so much, you forget what you watch.
It's true. Oh, you know what I did watch is The Witch.
Oh yeah.
The Robert Eggers.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
That's fucked, eh?
Yeah. I liked it.
I liked it too.
I didn't think I would. But I liked The Lighthouse. which is his second film.
That, right. Okay.
And I was like, oh, I liked it so much. I want to see what his previous film was like. And I'm like, oh, he's got a niche. Cause when I looked him up, he's got like three more feature films that are in that wheelhouse.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? He's got one about like Vikings. One, they're all like folklore based.
Yeah.
I'm like, good for him. He found a niche. Like he created a fucking niche.
What I liked about The Witch is it's one of those period movies that showed how bizarre and depressing everything was in those days, right?
How like dismal it was.
Oh, it's like
You just wake up and work.
Not a happy time.
No.
Everybody who, you know, if you actually look back at humans, like we've never really we've done lots of great things, but it's always been tragedy, right?
Yeah.
Like, fuck. Up until like 1965 or whatever, right? Like that's when things started. Right? I mean, God, like, and even still, we're still, anyway, we're getting too political already. But you saw The Witch, which I've seen, also liked it. Scary.
Spooky. Yeah, scary.
I did that shot where, like, the baby's there, and then she turns away.
I knew it was coming, and
then the baby's gone.
It still startled me.
I don't like that.
And then she looks up, and then, like, some of the little brambles are rustling.
Whispering, yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
You know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
It's like, baby's there, cut away. Baby's gone. Simple shot. It's like, okay, roll on the baby. Okay, take the baby out.
Keep rolling.
Cut. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, cut. Yeah. Completely effective filmmaking, right? Like, that guy's pretty smart.
Totally.
Right? Because that scared the fucking shit out of me.
Yeah. Well, you kind of have a feeling it's going to happen. Because you're like, well, how long are we going to watch her playing peekaboo with the baby?
Something bad's going to happen to this baby.
But you know what I really liked is how they revealed after the baby gets stolen, spoilers, it's like the first 5 minutes of the movie, that you see the witch. So you know the whole time that there is a witch in the woods.
See, and they used to condemn, or they still condemn witch hunting. And it's like, okay, but if witches were like that back in the day, then I don't condemn it. Do you know what I mean?
What?
Okay,
witches aren't real.
I know, but if they were, Clayton. Okay, so if there was a lady like that in your neighborhood, you'd be okay with it? Stealing babies and shit?
Stealing babies and like eating goats?
Yeah.
No, I probably wouldn't be
okay with it. And lived in a weird house like that?
I wouldn't be okay with
that. In the middle of fucking Stanley Park?
Well, the thing is that the characters had never seen her. It was just we, the audience, see her.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like the reverse of Jaws, where you don't see the shark.
Right.
It's scary until the end, and you're like, oh, the shark, there it is. But this was sort of like the characters never were sure if there was a witch or not, but you as the audience fucking know there's a witch.
Yeah.
Or several witches. Yeah.
And they both had mechanics in their mouth, but beyond that. Okay, but what else have you seen?
What about you? What have you seen?
You know what?
You're working. You're too busy to watch.
I have, but you know what I've been watching lately? Like, off topic, not off topic, but way off topic, is Modern fucking Family.
Oh, you were talking about this last weekend.
Yeah, and like, I it's not my cup of tea.
No.
However, it's a really good show.
Yeah.
But I like it. It's not my thing, but I really love it. I can't stop watching it. But it's not my thing.
Why isn't it your thing?
Because TV, first of all, not really my thing. Mm. Movies are my thing. You know this, right?
Yeah.
But a fucking Modern Family is really well written. I can't.
It's consistently funny. I think the characters are really well.
And they just, it's different, you know? They don't go to those tropes as much, right?
Yeah.
They kind of think outside the box. They take risks, which you know I love.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate it. I appreciate them. Because it's kind of like the jokes, like. They're risky, right? They're not safe jokes. Like, that's why I don't like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I don't like the safe shit.
Well, the safe shit is, it's almost like listening to music, right? It's like, set up punchline, right? Yeah, you know, it's like a rhythm. Whereas Modern Family and some shows like that, like I even like Parks and Rec, which is sort of the same setup, that Talking Heads style pseudo-documentary. It's kind of the same where the jokes are more like, I don't know. Yeah. Sprinkled in there.
Yeah. And I know exactly what you mean. And it's harder to write especially episodic, especially when they go for a long time and it's a big hit.
Yeah.
Then it's even harder because A, there's the pressure. B, you know, you have to continuously pump it out every mm-hmm. week, right? And when you're shooting and all that, right? But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a fucking great show. I don't know. I don't know what else to say.
You're like ashamed.
I know
like
that. I kind of am. I kind of am because I don't
know
why.
It's a popular show.
Because I just feel like it's not me, you know? Like it doesn't.
Maybe it is you.
I mean, it is. Maybe it's a finding out year. I know they have one writer on that show though who writes dumb jokes, and it pisses me off. And it's like if I was one of the writers, I'd be like, "Okay, we gotta get rid of fucking Craig or Devin or whatever the fuck his name is," and be like, "Because he writes stupid jokes about stupid. Do you know those jokes about like when people doing extreme things, that always bugs me. I don't know why. Like, oh, this guy's a mountain climber and he just got back from a trip from the fucking Andes or something, like some stupid thing that.
Yeah.
I hate that kind of writing. It fucking drives me nuts. Okay. It's like safe. Again, there I have one safe writer who writes safe jokes mm-hmm. and it sticks out in that show.
It's probably the network executive's nephew or something.
Yeah. It pisses me off. Okay. But you know, Eric Stone Street. The guy who's kind of the heavier guy who's yeah. in the gay couple, mm-hmm. the two men.
Yeah.
He's not gay in real life.
Yeah.
When I found that out, dude, I was like, holy shit, this guy. Like, that's really good acting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really good.
He's good.
He's a talented actor.
The whole cast is good in that show.
They are. They
Even
are.
The kids are good.
Yeah.
Oh.
They are. The one girl, and I shouldn't even say this, but the one girl who they had cast as a baby... And then she grew up on the show.
Yeah.
She struggled a lot in the beginning, but she's a kid. So I know it's so mean, but it's painful to watch sometimes.
She was like an actual baby at the start of the show.
So she had to learn.
She had to learn.
Yeah. But beyond that, one of the kids from that show is in my show.
Which one?
Well, I shouldn't say.
Oh, okay.
But one of them is.
Right. So which one?
Eric Stone Street. I wish.
Do you want to get into the topic or what?
I think we should, man, because there's a lot to talk about, bro.
Yeah.
A lot of ground. Well, not really.
It's going to get psychological.
It is.
It's going to get meta.
Very. Today this, yeah.
What?
No, you say it.
No, you say it.
No, you say it.
Today we're talking about Charlie Kaufman.
Charlie Kaufman, everybody. And the reason why we're talking about him is because he has a new movie that he wrote and directed on Netflix.
Called... I'm thinking of ending things.
I'm thinking of ending things.
I'm thinking of ending things.
So I know I fucking slag Netflix a lot on this podcast, and I'm not going to stop. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I'm going to congratulate them on finally making a decent movie.
Well, I was thinking a lot about what Graham said on our show, mm-hmm. where he was saying, like, are they making them or are they just buying them? And I think that I think it's a bit of a mishmash of both.
I think it totally is a mishmash of both. Obviously it is, but...
But either way...
Either way, it's whatever you're putting as a new movie on your streaming service. That's your movie.
Yeah.
Right?
An exclusive.
If you buy Tombstone or fucking Raiders of the Lost Ark or Charlie St. Cloud or whatever, that's like, oh, that movie already sucked or already was good, right?
Because it had a theatrical release and it had a DVD.
And it already has been in the $5.99 bin at Walmart, yeah. Charlie St. Cloud. but now that we've crossed that threshold where these movies, like I'm thinking of anything, obviously did not come out in the theater.
I think they did a limited run.
Did they?
I think they did.
Where?
Somewhere that wasn't
driving and fucking with COVID. New Zealand. Like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe they did. But what did you think of it?
I really liked it. I mean, going in, so it's based on a book.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
It's adapted from a book by an author named Ian Reid, Canadian author.
Oh, really? See, these are the reasons why.
And I didn't want to read too much about it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, I just want to be like shocked and awed. And I was, because it's good. It fucking goes all over the place. And I like to think that I understood it right away.
Yeah.
The basic premise.
It was hard to understand it right away.
Okay, there's going to be some spoilers here.
There is.
So,
but it's the kind of movie that, you know what?
Go listen to Dax Shepard if you don't want to hear the spoilers.
You can. I've never listened to him. What does he talk about on his podcast?
Fucking just, I hate him. I hate him so much.
Do you really?
Yeah, I hate him. He's such a dumbass. So yeah, right enough. Away, I was like, I mean, do you want to describe the plot?
I don't know. I mean, to me, like, you can just start by.
They're driving in the, Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley are driving in the car together.
Is that her name in real life? Jesse Buckley?
Yeah.
So they're Jesse and
Jesse and Jesse.
Jesus. That must have been fun. The first thing I noticed right away, though, is that that was one of the longest scenes in cinema history.
Them
that
driving in the car.
25 minutes or some shit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which was, that's crazy. But that got me, though, right?
But then like, the back half of the movie is the same thing because they're driving back.
I know.
In the dark.
Okay, so first of all.
But that being said, and you and I always praise movies that do things kind of like simply. Different.
Yeah, and simply.
Like keeping it simple, right? I thought it was really good. Like the performances were, you know, it's like it was pretty basic coverage.
And the writing was unique and it was, you know, authentic. And it was different, and I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And they used a whole fucking shitload of fake snow. And like, how did they? That must have been in a stage.
Had to just have been.
Blowing fucking. Yeah. Like, and then I'm thinking, and then I start thinking to myself, man, did they ADR this whole fucking thing after? And then
I was like, holy shit. No, they couldn't have.
You think they just got that snow to blow on someone with a silent fan?
Maybe it was just a dude with a fucking 4x4 flop.
It might have been. It might have been. You never know. But
a lot of it was tight enough where it could just be a little bit of flakes, like.
Yeah. Okay. Passing past. So the movie starts out where they're driving, and then but you don't know what kind of movie it is, and it's not your usual Charlie Kaufman. It's a little bit different.
It's a little bit different, but I think it's because he adapted it from that book.
Yeah. Exactly.
But I can see why they got him to adapt it. Or he chose to. I don't know what the...
But it's quite the adaptation, though. No pun intended. Because it's just pure fucking dialogue.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, unless the book's just like that, where they're just talking back and forth.
I didn't even know it was a book until last night.
Yeah, I didn't know it was a book until just now. But but here's my thing. Because you texted me, and you were like, dude, this movie is fucking giving me a panic attack. And I felt the same thing. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know what the fuck was going on in it at first. And you're like... Is it a horror? Is it a thriller?
That's the thing.
What is it?
When they're in the car going to the... They're going to Jesse Plemons... What was his character's name?
Oh, I can't remember. I watched
going it to his ago. House. His parents' house.
Jake.
Going to Jake's parents' house for dinner.
Yeah.
And they're driving and they're kind of chit-chatting. And she's thinking of breaking off the relationship.
She's thinking of ending things. Yeah.
And I loved how it's like her inner monologue... And then it gets interrupted by him trying to like have a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, that's happened to me so many times.
That happens to me on a daily basis.
Like in the shuttle for sure. Or I'm just
sure.
Like thinking about something and someone's like, hey brother, yeah. So I enjoyed that. But it was when they got to the house where I'm like, okay, where is this fucking going? Because the parents were so fucking weird.
I know, and they didn't come downstairs for so long.
Toni Collette, dude. As I said to Jordy over text, give her all the awards.
This show should be called the Toni Collette Praise Show.
She's so fucking good.
She's the best actor out there right now, I think. She's one of them.
She's so phenomenal. And then what's the, what was the?
David Thewlis?
Who is also an Anomalisa, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah. Who's been in tons of shit. He's a great British actor.
He's a good character actor, but he plays the dad and he's so weird too. And
it just kind of makes your fucking head spin. And then you start to notice that there's weird continuity things. At first I was like, oh, is that a mistake? And then I'm like, no, this is intentional. We're like the color of the girl's sweater is changing. The house is changing the fucking order. Like dude,
yeah.
It fucks with your brain, this movie.
Yeah.
In a realistic, don't care how smart or how dumb of a person you are, you're going to notice it and you're going to be like, what? Like it fucks with you.
Yeah.
Right?
There was something that I watched online about it. Those YouTube such and such movie explained videos which I love and hate. But they were saying, because I did notice the aspect ratio is like 4:3.
Like yes, TV. That was 4:3.
And I found that was actually making me a little nervous. Because there's a shot of her at the dining room table, and you know that Jake and the dad are like on either side of her.
Yeah.
But you can't see them because they're just out of frame. And then you're like, are they there or are they not there? Because it's like this really long shot. It was fucking stressing me out because there's just black bars on the side of my 16:9 TV.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. Like, no, I know. And then like the dog.
Yeah.
The dog shaking.
Yeah.
And then didn't
sort
stop.
Of like a looped shot of the dog shaking. Dude.
Like, come on. Let's fucking like... We all need a break.
Okay, so what do you want to analyze it? Do you want to get to the meaning of it? Or do you just want to talk about like what you thought of it? Because...
I mean, at the end of it, I had my own interpretation of what I thought it was.
Yeah.
But then I was like, am I right? So I did look it up. And I think that it's... And then I read this other... I saw this interview with Charlie Kaufman.
Oh.
And he was talking about how his movies... He doesn't even like to say what they mean.
Right.
Because he wants people to interpret them on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants people to
get what
have their own meaning about
it. Yeah. That's really smart.
It is smart. And to me, it's like that open-ended filmmaking, you know, because then it becomes of value to whoever watched it.
Exactly.
And whatever it means.
Exactly.
To them,
right? Yeah. Because it is art and art is subjective, right? So it might bring back some memories for certain people, or it might make people feel like angry, like just based on, and that's kind of the magic of it, right? Everyone kind of gets, whereas fucking Captain Marvel, as much as I love Brie Larson.
That wasn't
like
a bad movie.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like those kind of movies, it's like, it's designed to make you feel satisfied at the end.
Yeah.
It's a Snickers bar.
Yeah. Well, and they just, yeah. This movie has no MacGuffin.
There's no MacGuffin.
Although, yeah, but there was weird things like I thought. Okay, so what did you think it was? Like, what did you think the whole
when they're driving to the house, he's talking, and they're talking to each other about this and that and the other, and you kind of it's like intentionally vague. You're not like, what's up with these guys? Like these two people, and then it's cutting to that janitor.
Yeah, exactly. The janitor
in the school.
Yeah,
and. The janitor's watching them rehearse Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And then Jake mentions that he knows all the musicals, but then he says that line. He goes, well, I know Oklahoma best because they do it once or twice, or they do it every other couple of years. And then you're like, oh, he's the janitor.
He's the janitor.
So, and then they get interrupted completely, and the janitor's watching the fake Robert Zemeckis movie. Which I thought was so fucking funny.
Which is the story of how they met.
Yeah. But then it's because like he's taking his lunch break. So he's been thinking about this while he's working. The two people in the car.
Yeah.
Then he's watching a movie. So he's focused on that. So we're as the audience watching the movie that he's watching.
Yeah.
And then it cuts back to them in the car because he's back at work.
It's so fucked up.
And I was like, but is that right? I wasn't sure. I was like, is that what's going on?
But to me, the whole thing was just a thought. It was like the janitor thinking of
his
life or something.
Yeah, I think he was thinking
even think that existed.
No, I think he was thinking of what could have been.
Yeah, with somebody that maybe he did meet or didn't.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Because to me, too, it's like he did that almost on a daily. Like he had that fantasy dream sequence of the movie. But maybe his parents were real, but he never really did bring a girl home to meet his parents.
I think that was all fantasy. And
because,
he was trying to decide what would it be like to bring someone home. And because did you notice how, like her character, like she doesn't even have a name. Like I think at one point she's Lucy, but then they kind of like don't really call her by any name. And she sort of changes characters.
Yeah, and the way she looks changes.
Like she's super smart. She's super smart and articulated. Then when she's telling the story about how they met to the mom, she gets kind of like giddy and like bubbly and like it's like not. It's totally not how she was.
Yeah.
She's sort of taking on the mom's personality a little bit.
Yeah. Fuck, you're right. You're right. The thing that really gave it away—not away, but as far as to me—was the dumpster full of those cups.
Yeah.
Because it was like he had done that every day.
Yeah.
And he always went and got it.
His fantasy always ends up at that, coming back to the school or something.
The whole ice cream thing too, it was so weird. The way that he's like, oh, it's so sweet. And then he's like, I want to get rid of these cups. They're going to melt. Like,
yeah, he's like, can't.
Ooh, it's a kind of movie that leaves you thinking, but also leaves you kind of disturbed a little bit.
Yeah.
But also leaves you satisfied. I don't know.
Well, the girls that worked at the, what was it called? Tulsi Town?
Tulsi Town.
The girls that worked at the Tulsi Town were in the school when the janitor. Right. I didn't notice the two blonde girls at first, but they were kind of making fun of the janitor. But I noticed the other girl, the brunette girl, because she's sort of like the shy one.
Yeah.
I recognized her when she was at the Tulsi Town. I'm like, oh, so he's like make-believing. Or maybe that's a real thing. Like maybe those kids do work at a Tulsi Town and like, he goes to the Tulsi Town and like it's embarrassing because they know that he's the janitor at the school.
But then the other girl who wasn't the weird blonde one, like the other one that actually served them.
Yeah. The one I'm talking about.
Yeah. So she said to her, she's like, I'm scared for you or something. And it's like, but then you're like, well, what is that? Like, and then I don't understand that part of it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I ever will.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the ballet at the end.
Oh, yeah, it was so good. It was so good.
I liked it.
Yeah. It was great.
Cause they see each other in the hall and then like the ballet people like step in
to
their place. And then they're like, I was like, this is great, because earlier you saw the kids practicing a dance thing in the hallway that the janitor's watching, and they're like bumping into the lockers, and this was like a nice version of that.
Yeah. Dude, it was so, it's so existential and so out there. But
I don't know. I really liked it.
I liked it too. And I liked at the end how he had that weird like cartoon dream, and then he was like naked and all that shit.
Yeah.
It's like, what is going on?
But he at the wins, same he time, wins the Nobel Prize on the stage on the Oklahoma set, and he sings the song from Oklahoma. I've actually seen Oklahoma, so I was like, oh, nice.
I think I have too.
I actually kind of know what's going on here.
And they're in Oklahoma, are they not?
Probably.
Because Tulsi, like, yes. Tulsa, I don't know. Fuck, weird.
But the one thing, when he was on stage, there's like a spotlight on him. I was looking at him, I'm like, his makeup is so bad. And then it revealed the audience, and I was like, oh, they're all in like
weird, bad makeup.
High school play old makeup. Person makeup.
Guy, this is what I mean about...
Because they're at the high school auditorium. So it's like all a play.
And it's all just, exactly. That's all it was. It was all just him thinking about, and what a concept for a movie. Like somebody's weird, like half real. Because we all do that. We all... imagine ourselves in different lives.
If you say that you don't do that, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah, exactly. Like I do that all the time. I have like these weird fantasies that I'm like somebody else doing something else, you know?
And it's interesting because we use that device in movies a lot where, like, do you remember in High Fidelity when Tim Robbins comes in and he has like the three escalating fantasies beating the shit out of him?
I love the last one.
And then it cuts back to when he like pulls
him doing nothing.
He pulls out the
exactly
AC unit. But like we use that device a lot in those little snippets where, oh, it's just a dream or it's someone fantasizing for like 3 minutes. But like to do an entire film that's like just that fantasy.
Yeah. And it's the little nuances of him remembering it differently, because that's why I kept thinking, oh, that's why her shirt's changing.
She was like different versions of the same person.
Yeah. It's just a woman that he never did meet, but wanted to meet and wanted to take.
At one point, she's a painter. Right. And she shows them her paintings, and then she's a physicist, and you're like, well, I guess someone could be a painter and a physicist. But then
I didn't even pick
up on
that.
Then she was something else too. She was like a student studying something. It was
she was a poet.
Yeah. It was like
a fucking poem, and
her like occupation and hobbies kept changing along with her personality. So I don't know.
I used to, when I was a kid, I used to fantasize that I was an underground pit fighter. Didn't you used to have daydreams about dumb shit like that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That you were a paleontologist or
something? Yes, I did want to be a paleontologist.
Dusting away on some old
I still have
Brontosaurus.
I still have those dreams.
Oh, sure, man. Oh, fuck. Last night I had a fucking weird dream that you and me did a movie with Robert De Niro.
Ooh.
And he was shooting the shit with us, and you were setting up his Facebook for him. He was like, you were finding photos and we were going through his MacBook, me and you and him. And he was like super old. And I was like, man, this is such a treasure trove of photos. Cause it was like him on like the set of this and the set of that, and him and Ben Stiller on Meet the Fall, you know, whatever, all these things. Right. And me and you were like trying to pick his photos and we're shooting the shit. And I felt so happy, Clayton. I was so happy in that dream. And I woke up this morning and I was like, man, that would be cool.
Fuck, that's funny.
And he kept saying, you know, I'm old now, so I got to have Facebook.
To keep connected with
people. Could you imagine the pictures? Like the pictures on his MacBook? It was like him and Scorsese and him and,
oh, yeah.
Him and Taxi Driver. And it was like my mind had created all of these
like
pictures.
These intimate like, moments.
They were like old Polaroids and shit.
Like not production stills.
Candids.
But like, yeah.
That he had.
Yeah.
Of things that somebody that he knew took. My mind created these photos and we were going through them and like, we were like, oh, what do we pick? There's so many good ones.
Him and Joe Pesci playing Scrabble.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Or like him and Sean Penn, like just shit. Like
having mojitos out on the deck.
How does our mind see? And that's what I felt like watching this movie is it's like, it's just a creation, right? A creation of somebody's thoughts. And I loved it.
No, it was great.
But should we? Okay, so we both agree that this is a great movie and people should watch it.
I think so. I've absolutely
watched even it. If you heard the spoilers,
it's not a long movie either.
Yeah, but it takes a bit of like, it takes a bit of patience.
Yes, you know because what I mean? Honestly, like when they got to the house, and that's probably like half an hour in, I was still like, "Where is this going? Like, where?"
I know.
I didn't even know what genre the movie was going to be. You know, but I liked that.
I thought the parents were going to kill them.
Me too, because they are upstairs and they won't come down.
And then the pig and the maggots.
Yeah, he takes her out to the barn before they even go inside. It's weird. Like, super weird.
But that's just his dark side of his thoughts, I guess, right?
Yeah, or it's just like, you know how you're like weaving this fantasy, but you're trying to go in like consecutive order, and then you're sort of making detours. You're like, no, not that, this. And then, no, actually, back to this. Like,
yeah, no, exactly.
You know, it's like incoherent almost.
Exactly.
There's no editing involved. It's just like a stream of consciousness.
Okay, and this is what we love
about... Much like our podcast.
Yeah, totally. This is what we love about Charlie Kaufman as a writer and as a director, as he is a risk taker, and he's made some real fucking standout movies.
Yeah.
Like, none of his movies, like, I mean, maybe a few of them, but most of them, A, people know about, and B, people have watched on drugs, and C, people, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're not just regular movies. Like, they're unique. They're different.
Well, I was saying to you before we started rolling, like, I did a little research on some of his well-known movies, and it seems like he is definitely a risk taker.
Oh, the biggest.
And almost. It's paid off.
It has.
Somehow.
And not everybody, okay, first of all, not everybody has this luxury. Because people, you can't just write your stupid fucking scripts and people are going to believe in you. It's not going to happen.
You know, there is more room for that now with streaming services in 2020.
Although the 90s did have some fucking weird movies.
When he started in 99, you're still going to the studios to get your movie made.
Yeah, for sure.
Dude. Right?
And they were way more frightened back then to lose money.
I think he got lucky with people taking risks on his scripts, and I think he got lucky with equally weird directors directing the movies he wrote, as we'll talk about.
Well, I mean, and him and Spike Jonze coming together, was in itself a stroke of genius that the universe.
Well, they both benefited from that.
Well, exactly, because they're both
a little out there.
Totally out there, man. Although Spike Jonze seems like he's kind of a normal guy.
I think they both are normal guys. I just think that they.
Their
like,
outlets.
When Charlie Kaufman is like, I'm going to write something. He's like, I don't want to write a normal. Like, I just don't think he wants to do that.
Okay, first of all, Spike Jonze reminds me of Cabbage. I don't know why.
But I know we talked about that.
But also, he just pops up randomly in
we
acting
talked about
roles
this.
Too.
We talked about this earlier. We already talked about this.
In the other podcast?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Because he was in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, dude.
But I had no idea it was him because I didn't really know what he looks like.
Okay, but what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about...
Okay, I have his filmography here in order.
Okay.
And it's not very long, people listening, so don't worry. It's not like the Stephen King one. 96 titles. But he has done TV, but we're not going to talk about that.
We don't.
Because he's wrote some episodes for TV shows that I don't think are very notable.
No. Well, and some of his things are adaptations, which he wrote a movie about.
Yes. So the first one is Being John Malkovich. This is 1999.
Yeah.
He wrote the script and he was, for some reason in his head, he's like, it's got to be John Malkovich. He's like, he's just the right actor.
And at the time, nothing even remotely like this had ever been done.
No, nothing.
Like not even
nothing
remotely, I don't think. Well, maybe I shouldn't say that. I mean, there's been some out there movies, but.
So he wrote the script. He just wrote it and then he shopped it around and everyone's like, no. And one producer, one exec was like, why the fuck can't it be being Tom Cruise?
Not as interesting.
Doesn't
well,
would it 99?
I think John Malkovich was a good choice.
I think it's a brilliant choice.
So you could have gone a few different ways. It could have been being fucking Jason Robards. It could have been. It could have been being.
He said he thinks the reason it worked with John Malkovich is because if you say the name John Malkovich over and over, it's Malkovich. Like John Malkovich, John Malkovich, John Malkovich. It's like you kind of don't get tired of hearing it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's such a peculiar kind of name. But he shopped the script around and was getting no. So he sent it to Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh.
Who gave it to his daughter's boyfriend, who was Spike Jones.
No shit.
Yeah.
Sofia Coppola and Spike Jones used to date?
They were married.
What?
They divorced in 2003.
God, could you imagine that?
That combo?
Dinner table?
Yeah, Oh, yeah. The three of them?
So strange.
And so that's how Spike Jones and Charlie Kaufman got put together, because Spike Jones loved it. So they got together and put it together. So Spike Jones directed it. John Cusack signed up for the role because he went to his agent at this time and was like, I want you to find me the weirdest, most unproducible script you can find.
What?
So that's what they found for him. He read it, loved it, signed on right away.
Wow.
Catherine Keener took the part, but she said that she wasn't right for the role. Ended up getting nominated for an Oscar.
Did she for this?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even fucking know that.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing about this movie, though, that I'm going to say right away.
Okay.
Okay, the filmmakers obviously, like Spike Jones and everybody, obviously had some challenges, right?
Yeah.
Like they had to make the small seven and a half floor.
Yeah.
They had to.
Did you just rewatch this, right?
I watched it this morning.
Holy shit.
Yeah, like after my Clayton and Jordy De Niro dream, I watched Being John Malkovich.
Why can't it be being Robert De Niro?
Robert De Niro. That way, because it would have changed. It would have worked.
Kaufman said later, he's like, well, the reason I liked John Malkovich, because he has an air about him that's like kind of interesting and like.
Well, and at the time he wasn't really like, this show kind of made him more famous.
I think it did.
It totally did.
Because I didn't know who he was.
Well, you knew who he was, but he was he was a very serious actor. And he did very like important movies at the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like Empire of the Sun.
Yeah.
He was in like a lot of stuff, but you kind of didn't, you weren't like he wasn't fucking bedroom poster material. Right.
What?
But
what are you talking about? I mean,
and if one of our listeners as a little girl had John Malkovich on their wall before this movie came out, by all means, live your life. Live your
please
best
let
life.
Us know where you got that poster. You must have had it custom made, because it's not like you could have got it at Music World.
They weren't selling that. Remember Music World? Remember Poster World?
Yes.
Fuck.
Oh my God, you just blew my fucking mind. That was a whole store of posters.
Okay, but Kurt Brune was the one who said to me, yo, remember Poster World one day? And I was like, oh my God.
Oh,
it was at Metro Town.
There was one at Brentwood too.
Dude, I love Poster World. Remember, hold on for a sec. Remember posters? Like, do people have posters?
Yeah. You can't even, can you still get posters?
I think you can.
Like a
but
what?
Are they of like hot chicks in thongs?
No.
Next to a Lamborghini?
No, Kuntosh? They're all Marvel characters.
Dude, boring.
Boring.
Okay, stupid. But anyways. Okay, so let's talk about,
So let's talk about the movie.
But the filmmakers had a tough thing. So their biggest challenge though on that movie, in my opinion, was to make Cameron Diaz look ugly.
There was a whole interview about her too,
right? Like that was a whole thing—a wig and a fucking.
The makeup department really, was like, "What do you? What? How do you make?
How do you do this?" Because she still didn't look ugly. Like when they do close-ups of her, you're like, "Oh," because this was like not what 4 years, 5 years, how long after the mask? Like the mask was like 92.
No, Mask was later. Was like 95, 96 maybe.
Yeah, well, that's okay. Well, that's what I'm saying is like this, like Cameron Diaz was like the, you know, Hollywood hot stuff. Yeah. And then she just fucking dove into this role. I remember at the time even being like, oh shit, like she's got.
This was probably the year after Something Broke Mary.
Yeah, you're right. Right? You're right. And that, to me, that's what I love about when people do that. It's like, that was a risk for her career.
It was, everyone involved, it was a risk. Sure. And I think it fucking paid off dividends for all of them.
Totally, right? Even Cusack at the time was kind of in a dip, right? He wasn't like a huge guy at the time, right? Yep. I mean, he was in the 80s, but then he kind of had a little lull, right?
He did like, he did the Robert Downey Jr.
Whoop.
Yeah. The dip, the and come road. Back.
Yeah, totally.
A lot of actors do it, right?
Especially from the 80s to the 90s, like that, there was a lot of 80s actors who kind of faded a bit, right?
Yeah.
Big time.
Fuck. See, I haven't watched it in a long time, so I'm relying on you here to
well,
to
the thing, well, it's exactly like you remember, except for you forget about A, how good the acting is, B, how good the directing is, C, the marionette. Mm-hmm. Aspect of it mm-hmm. is so fucking well done. Like the puppet, like I don't even know if it's real, like a lot of it, but or if John Cusack's actually doing it.
Oh, probably not.
Probably not. But they do these puppet sequences, and you're like, wow, this puppeteering is fucking top shelf.
So you remind me, because he goes through that little portal, and he ends up in John Malkovich for like a couple hours,
15 minutes.
15 minutes.
That's how it starts up.
So first. Does he become at the end? Does he go in there and do the puppeteering for John Malkovich?
Yeah,
he
takes over Malkovich's body like a puppet because he figures out he figures out how to control him for longer than 15 minutes.
Right.
And there's this whole part about how he's talking about it. Like you have to just convince the consciousness that you're wearing a suit that you enjoy. That's the analogy or something like that. Yeah.
So weird.
It's really weird, but it's like he's like a struggling puppeteer guy.
Yeah.
What do you even say?
Puppeteer.
Puppeteer, yeah. Struggling puppeteer. I almost said puppetist. I don't know why. Cameron Diaz is like, why don't you get a job? Because, you know, this pup. And there's this other guy who's a puppeteer in the world. His name's like.
Oh, yeah.
Name, he's like, he had this giant puppet off the fucking Eiffel Tower or some fucking thing. And then so he finds a job because he's a really good filer.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm an excellent filer. And he finds that old man.
Yeah.
And he can file really fast, like his fingers, because he's a puppeteer. So he's like,
we're talking about analog filing for all the Gen Zs out there, like with file folders in a filing cabinet, like not on a computer.
And people used to do that. Yeah, I mean, they still do. There's still paper files out there.
Probably
records.
They're always on set.
We always have to move those fucking cabinets. No, but and then so he goes to that weird 7.5 floor, and then. He's in his office and he drops a file behind a filing cabinet.
Oh yeah, and he pulls it out and he finds the door. Yeah.
And then he goes into it and he's John Malkovich, and then it's like such
an exhilarating. And they get spit out on the side of the highway.
Of the turnpike, New Jersey turnpike, right? He looks back and he like sees New York, right? And the Twin Towers are in it actually.
Oh yeah.
I believe they are.
No, they would have been for sure.
They would have been, but they don't think they take them out. Because they do take them out of certain shows.
Do they?
Yeah, they do.
I wish they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I don't know why they would do that either. I believe they're in there. But then the part you forget about is the Catherine Keener, Cameron Diaz, John Cusack, like love triangle that it becomes.
Oh, yeah. I did forget about that.
Because you forget that like he's going into Malkovich and then Cameron Diaz goes into Malkovich.
Right.
Her name is Lottie in the show and in the movie. And then they both fall in love with Catherine Keener.
Right.
But Catherine Keener only likes Cameron Diaz's character, Lottie, when she's inside Malkovich. And she's in the consciousness of Malkovich because she can see her like eyes, like see her the love in the eyes or something like that. So anyways, it fucking becomes this lover's quarrel. That's the part that you forget about, right?
Totally forgot about that.
And then John Cusack eventually figures out how to like take over his body. And then he ends up falling in love with Catherine Keener as John Malkovich. And then they kind of like take over the fucking, he changes his career to become a famous puppeteer.
Yeah.
Oh, like in like 8 months. Right. And he becomes like the world's most famous puppeteer. And they do interviews with all these other actors that are like, I think we'll all be puppeteering at some point. It's so out there, but it's just so good. It's so well done, man.
Fun. See, that's what's so good about him is that he takes a weird idea and he just like
goes with it.
Goes with it so deep.
See, and even
whereas a normal writer, I think, would be like, okay, that's weird enough that they go into someone's mind. We don't need to add a love triangle. He's like, no, what we do have to add a love triangle.
And I wonder if Spike Jonze would be Spike Jonze without Charlie Kaufman. And I wonder if Charlie Kaufman would be Charlie Kaufman without Spike Jonze.
I know. I think that partnership, because that was the debut for both of them.
Well, and I think it gave them confidence in just being fucking bizarros.
Yeah.
And then they both made careers of it. Because even in Her, it's like, in a way, like if somebody told me Her was written by Charlie Kaufman, it wasn't.
It wasn't, but I think they have the same sensibilities in storytelling.
Yeah, exactly.
And so just, I think that's why they're good together. And then when they're separate, like Her is Spike Jonze written and directed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, Charlie Kaufman written and directed. Both, well, adapted. And it's like, it's almost the same tone.
Yeah.
Because that's just how they...
That's how they do it.
That's how they do it.
And it works.
Let's move on to... I'm going to skip Human Nature because I don't think either of us have watched it.
No.
And I don't think it's very famous. The next one is Adaptation, which I think a lot of people have seen because it was 2 years later after Malkovich.
Yeah.
And I love that in that movie, you watch them making John Malkovich.
Yeah, I know. Like, this is... But he doesn't have a brother in real life.
No.
That was a story.
Adaptation is a semi-true story of Charlie Kaufman, the real life writer, trying to adapt Susan Orlean, the real life author's real life book, The Orchid Thief.
Right.
Which he was actually assigned to do.
Right.
And he struggled with it so much that he just was like, I don't know how to do this. And then something happened. I just read this last night, but I've already forgotten. Something happened where they kind of shelved the project briefly. And he's like, so there was no notes coming in. So he just wrote. He's like, this is the only idea I have is to write me trying to write this adaptation. Right. He made up a lot of things like a twin brother.
Yeah.
Which he put on the script, like co-written by, I think, what was the brother's name? Donald or something?
I can't remember. Charlie Kaufman and fucking something else, yeah.
And the whole relationship between Susan Orlean and the Orchid Thief character, played by Chris Cooper, that was all fake. He wrote that. I made that up. And the alligator attack is all made up and stuff like that, too. It was like very... Everyone was really nervous about making it.
I bet. Because it's, again, huge risk. Right?
Huge risk. And Susan Orlean was like, she at first was like, what? Like, you're going to write me as a character in
this movie?
Not only use my name, but make me a character doing drugs and having a sexual relationship with my subject, which never happened.
But then she was like, they were like, yeah, but here's the thing, Susan Orlean, Meryl Streep's going to play you. And then she was like, oh, well, that changes everything. Of course.
Well, they said that, but they also said, yeah, but Charlie Kaufman wrote himself like masturbating through the whole movie. And she's like, yeah, okay. So it's like, it's not just me that's being changed.
The weirdo.
Because I think what they were like, we have to, if we do it, we have to use the real names. Because that's what makes it exciting and interesting, right?
Well, and I mean... Fuck, dude.
So that was Spike Jonze as well, directing that, right?
One thing about Adaptation that I remember, I haven't recently watched it, but I've watched it like 3 or 4 times in my life, so I remember it enough. But Chris Cooper's performance was fucking just out of this world.
That was the movie, maybe it was American Beauty, but I think that was the movie that really...
solidified him.
Yeah.
He was good in American Beauty, but he kind of played, well, obviously the bad guy.
He wasn't really in it that much. Whereas this is, he's like one of the main characters.
But that fucking, and this movie to me too, like that, remember when he gets into that car accident, that flashback car accident in it?
Oh yeah.
Man, that was well done. Holy smokes.
Oh shit, I forgot about that.
When he backs the car out of the fucking driveway and just gets fucking T-boned.
Yeah.
Because you did not see it coming.
No.
And they have the camera like on a rig. Obviously it's like they did an effect or something, but they kind of, they back out and the camera's on the car and then you just like, you have no idea it's coming. And then you just see that fucking, it's just unbelievable.
Ooh, I feel sick thinking about it.
Yeah.
this movie, I like 2002, I was in film school. So this movie, of course, was
were
like,
you really?
Oh my God. Yeah, me and Ben.
Was it that long ago you guys were in film school?
Yeah, buddy. Yeah.
Fuck, eh?
fuck, this movie was so good. I just loved it so much because it's just so weird.
And when Meryl Streep is high when she did take, and she's on the phone with him.
Yeah.
That's such a great bit of acting too.
Well, you know, you and I have said this over and over. She's like.
Yeah, fuck.
Gold.
Remember gold. The Post? God.
The Post.
Oh boy.
Okay, so that's adaptation.
And you know this other, yeah.
Do you have anything else that you remember from that?
Well, you want to talk about? I remember it was a departure from Nick Cage.
It's one of the. It's honestly for me is one of the only movies that I can really take him seriously in.
Have you ever seen The Bad Lieutenant: Port of Call?
No.
Fuck, he's good in that.
I've never
dude.
Heard of that.
You should watch it. It's a fucking good movie.
Okay. Here's my take on Nick Cage. Yeah. I don't think he's a bad actor.
No.
I think he chooses to go way over the top, and people let him, and then that results in a kind of campy movie.
Yeah.
But he can be really good.
He can be great. He's really hit and miss. He has a new Netflix movie out, and I've contemplated watching it.
Does he?
It's called, like, The Colors of the Night or something.
Oh, know. Color Out of Space.
Color Out of I've Space, seen it. Yeah.
It's H.P. Lovecraft.
It's good?
It's okay.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's okay. I wanted it to be weirder.
There's so much content now. Like, I can't... Like, between doing this podcast and watching movies for this... and then I hear somebody else, like, I've heard so many people recommend, like, The Boys and... Cobra Kai and
I don't think I can do those prestige TV shows anymore.
I just who has They're, the time?
Man? That's the thing. There's such a time suck. I who used to be all time? About TV. Now I'm like, no, movies. Movies.
I'm the same.
It's a two, I've always 2 hours been like that. Out.
And they're just movies to me are more fun. They're more my thing. That's why Modern Family isn't my thing, because it's TV.
Okay. Moving on to Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which yes. I just watched yesterday.
So good.
This was George Clooney directing.
Loved it.
So Charlie Kaufman wrote this. It's based on, or it's an adaptation of the memoirs of the guy, what's his name? I already forgot. Oh my God.
Chuck Barris.
Chuck Barris, who created The Dating Game.
Yeah.
The Newlywed Game.
Yeah.
The Gong Show, among many other TV shows, who wrote an autobiography about his working for the CIA during this whole time.
Yeah. Like, talk about a real life, double life.
And I right. don't think it's ever been confirmed. It's no. just sort of his word against...
The CIA?
Yeah.
Who do you get and believe? It's a tough choice.
Though. Right? But then in the movie, they have all these... They have a couple talking heads of people who worked... Like real life people who worked with him.
Right.
And a lot of them were like... Well, he did would disappear for a week at a time. He was always going to other countries.
He always...
It's like
he spoke sort of like, six languages.
They were like, it sort of meshes in a way. I don't know if it's true, but...
He came back one time with a bullet wound in his shoulder. But beyond that, who knows?
Did you seen it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater. In 2002
or whatever. I've, came out. This is the second movie I've seen directed by George Clooney, and I'm like, not bad.
What was the other one?
The other the one American. I want... He stars in that. The other one I watched was Suburbicon.
Oh, Suburbicon. Fuck.
Did you like it?
I mean to watch that.
It got low ratings, but I really liked it.
Matt Damon, right?
Yeah, and yeah. Julianne Moore.
See, even with movies, I can't keep up.
I know. Well, that one's actually pretty old now.
I forgot Drew Barrymore's in this.
Oh, yeah, and she's pretty good.
She's always good, man.
And Julia Roberts was really good, too.
Dick Clark, Michael
Cera. This was like a first... title role for Sam Rockwell.
Right.
Because I think he'd been a supporting actor a lot, but not really a lead.
He's fucking rad, dude.
I love him so much.
His body of work is something else.
But
wait, when did Moon come out?
Moon?
Was that before?
2015?
No, dude.
No?
Come on.
Dude, I don't know. Does it matter? 2009.
Oh, 2009. Moon. I was like, fuck, dude, did it. I started losing my mind, man. That's what happens for everybody out there who's like, you know, in your late 30s and shit. It's like, when you're like, there's been too long of a time frame.
Yeah.
For you to like have reference to anything.
Yeah, I know.
And then there's big chunks of time that you totally forget about.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, wait, what? How old was I then? Like, for me, it's easy because my age matches up with the years kind of.
Oh, yeah.
Like now there's 2020, I'm 40. Like when it was 2009, I was 29. When it was 2013, I was 33. You know what I mean? So I can quickly like do that math.
Yeah, it's hard for me because I'm bad at math.
Yeah, exactly. And you're like
83, so that's two times two.
Oh, I can't believe I'm 40, dude. Fucking kill me now.
Okay, let's move on to, I think, probably one of, if not the most famous Charlie Kaufman movie.
Yeah.
Sunshine. Eternal Sunshine
of the Spotless Mind.
This was written by Charlie Kaufman, directed by Michel Gondry.
Is it Michelle or is it Michael?
Michael Gondry. Because he's French, know. So I want to say Michelle.
I think it's... Michael sounds right.
I'll just call him Gondry.
Hey, Gondry!
This was an idea that he came up with in 1998 and approached Kaufman kind of like in the early 2000s.
To write it.
And he was busy doing both Being John Malkovich and adaptation. So he's like, well, I'd love to do it, but he kind of had to put it on the back burner.
Right.
So then they got back together and they did it. And again, studios read the script and were really nervous about it.
Well, of course they were.
They were like, what?
Because they're a bunch of titties, witties, and they want to fucking make 6 million fucking trillion.
And Gondry, I don't know if he had done a really big...
Well,
I think he directed Human Nature, didn't he?
He's done a lot, and he's out there too. Like we can put him into this crowd of.
He did a lot, but not like big studio pictures.
No, but since then, and he's had a few like bombs too since then, right?
Yeah.
Like before that he did.
Did you see Be Kind Rewind?
Yeah, I loved it.
I loved it too.
Yeah, Be Kind Rewind's awesome.
It's a great movie. But so they put this together and. I mean, even the casting, like, this is Jim Carrey in a serious role.
Right.
But I guess it would have been after Truman Show, so he'd already... Oh, helicopter.
Chopper, sir.
Fuck, it's been a while. Radar.
I hope somebody's okay. No, Michael Gondry, I want to say Michael, but it might be Michelle. Anyways, Gondry.
Let's call him Michael Michelle.
Michael Michelle Gondry. Michael Michelle? Gondry?
Michelle Michael.
Is he French-Canadian?
I'll
look that up after. He did The Green Hornet, which was a big fucking bomb.
Oh, he did that?
Yeah, because it was too like...
Woo, my favorite Seth Rogen?
And yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Rogen and Jay Cho and Christoph Waltz. I didn't even know Christoph Waltz in that. Fuck.
I never saw it.
I think I did, but again, too much time has passed in my life. Yeah. Where now
well,
it's
not
like,
a memorable movie.
Not really.
What a thing to revive, dude. Green Hornet. Like, fucking get out of here.
Yeah, that's a lot. I know.
So anyway, this movie, I loved this movie, and I liked the way it shot with all that weird handheld, like when the memories are being erased.
And just the flashbacks of
people that don't have a face.
Yep.
Kind of stuff.
Like Jim Carrey, like what his first kind of like, wasn't it? Like his first kind of departure from being...
Well,
wacky Jim Carrey.
What I was trying to say is the Truman Show. I think he showed signs of the serious. He was kind of wacky in that a little bit, but then there are some.
No, you're right. The Truman Show was his first like big, and then Man in the Moon too. So no, this isn't his first thing.
No, but still, I think that someone of his comedic caliber struggles to book dramatic roles.
Now, do you feel like Kate Winslet in this movie? Do you feel like certain times when certain guys direct these movies, they make the female lead? Like, it's kind of a self-move. Like, it's about Michael Gondry, Michael Michelle. Do you know what I mean? And, like, my point is that, like, Kate Winslet, they make them, and the guy did it in, what's his name? Edgar Wright did it in Scott Pilgrim, too.
Ramona Flowers.
Yeah, they kind of cast, and then they make this girl dye her hair, and then it becomes, like, their dream girl. It's like the nerd's dream girl.
Well,
am I right or wrong by saying that?
No, I think you're partially right. I think the reason that they have her dye her hair so often is so you know what period of the memories you're in.
Yeah.
Because it's all over the place.
Would you do that if it was available? Have certain memories erased? Fuck.
I think...
What a concept.
If I hadn't seen this movie, yes. But now that I have, I'm like, I don't think it would.
Because it doesn't go well.
It doesn't go well, and I don't think it would be a good idea.
There's no free lunch, Clinton.
No free lunch in memory.
And then you might see that person.
Well, that's what happens in the movie, is that they meet again and it all starts exactly. again. Exactly. They have the same meet cute.
Exactly. Fine. Oh. Oh, what a term that is. No, but okay. I feel like I've had this happen to me.
You had your memory erased?
Well, as we all know.
Someone erased you from their memory.
No, I feel like some of my memories have been erased. Mm-hmm. Or there might have been a time in my life where I might have been not all there. Possibly 2011, 2012. Where I've met people. Because people come up to me sometimes and they're like, hey, man, how's it going? And I'm like, one bit. You don't have that ever? Hey, remember that time? Remember that show we did together? Blah, blah, blah.
I did. I had that with someone who was on Olympus. And they're like, hey, Clayton. I'm like, oh, hi. We met. And he was so mad.
I feel so bad about it, too.
And I'm like, I don't remember you.
Who was it?
I don't want to say in case they listen to it. Because then they'll be like, no, so you didn't remember me. And then you're outing me on your podcast. But it's like... You know how I struggle with social situations in general.
You do.
And I don't...
You're struggling right now.
I'm struggling right now just having you in my house. my best friend. I don't know how to talk to you. It's a strange phenomenon if people listening, if they've ever had it happen to them.
Oh, I'm sure most people do, but...
But could you imagine someone coming up to me like, yeah, we dated for 5 years.
Oh, like, that would be weird.
What?
That would be fucking... bizarre.
That would be so bizarre.
You'd have to go seek psychiatric help.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because something is wrong.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like if this technology did exist, I think a lot of people would do it.
I think a lot of people would do it.
People who have trauma and things like that.
Yep.
Right.
I think it could be very helpful for some people. I think that in the movie, the main characters use it to get over a bad breakup, which I think would be a frivolous, selfish use of the technology.
Yeah.
But I think that, like people who have gone through some serious trauma that have nothing to do with them, witnessing a murder or being raped or something.
Yeah.
I think
phenomenal
technology.
But people would use it willy-nilly.
That's the thing.
Because they'd be like, oh, this person in grade 10 broke my heart. And it would
cost a lot of money, and then people that were rich and dumb would use it, and they'd tie it all up, and then the people who really need to use it wouldn't be able to use it.
We do all have that person from grade 10 or grade 12.
Oh, for sure.
Broke our fucking heart.
Yeah,
right? For sure. We?
Yeah.
I don't, but
Or beat others. Us up. What?
No.
Let's move. Okay, let's go to the next one. You have to say the title because I don't know how to pronounce it.
Synecdoche. Synecdoche.
I want to say it's synecdoche.
I was calling it syndioche.
Let's say that. Syndioche, New York.
No, we can't because that's not right.
Oh.
It's an actual term that has a weird meaning.
Why didn't we look up how to pronounce it before we did
that? How you say synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
Because remember how I was trying to, because when
he says it in the movie,
when Otto was our guest,
yes,
he's born in a place called Schenectady, New York.
Oh.
So that's the pun of Schenectady.
Oh, I see. That there isn't a real place that sounds like it.
Yeah. So remember how Otto and remember we were talking to him about it?
Yeah. So Schenectady, New York is a film. This is Charlie Kaufman's directing.
Synecdoche.
Fuck. This is 10 minutes of our life we'll never get back. God.
Synecdoche.
And neither will you, listeners. Synecdoche, New York.
Synecdoche.
I'm just going to call it S, New York.
Okay, but hold on quickly. Before, can I just tell a little weird fact about
We're having some major pronunciation problems on this.
I do this thing. I wanted to call it syndioche because we're Western Canadian and we don't pronounce French properly, yet we always... have French in our lives.
Yes.
So we have our own version of the French, right?
Yeah.
Like Montpellier and but we say
LaCroix.
LaCroix. But Tom Ellis, when he was talking to me about Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais, I go, no, it's Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant. And Tom looks at me like, what?
But they're British.
That's exactly what he said. He's like, mate, they're British. I'm like, oh, but I'm like, in Canada, you would say
Marchand.
Marchand would be that name. And then he was so fucking confused.
And the AIS would be Zay.
Like Gervais.
The S would be silent. Right? Yeah.
We have this weird way. And even people from Quebec are like, that's not right either.
We're so, like, well, we're caught in the middle, okay?
Yeah, we have to look at the cereal box plus it's fucking, you know what I mean? We all took French, so we sort of know it, but don't. And yeah, I don't know.
I am the worst at French. Okay.
We're the worst.
So what are we saying?
Well,
Synecdoche.
Synecdoche. Okay.
That's not how it's spelled, though.
Synecdoche. Doki. Synecdoche.
Synecdoche.
Okay, let's stop this.
It's a film called Synecdoche, New York, that Charlie Kaufman wrote and directed.
And you've seen it.
I saw it recently. And you saw it a long time ago.
And I was way too high and drunk to remember it. And I tried to rewatch it last night, and it couldn't fucking find it, man.
Yeah. It's a hidden gem. And literally.
It's not on Amazon. It's not on YouTube. It's not on Google Play. It's not on Netflix. Like, fuck, man.
I rented it from Black Dog during the COVID shutdown. So I was lucky enough to be able to watch it.
See, yeah. The thing is about...
Great movie. Yeah. Philip Seymour Hoffman.
God, it's too bad.
God, I miss him.
Fuck, man.
God, I miss him.
Every movie that Charlie Kaufman does, though, he gets this fucking like all-star lineup.
Well, this is the thing,
without
right?
question.
He's become a name like Wes Anderson. Because Wes Anderson, in every movie, he's like collects more and more A-listers.
I know.
And just like stacks them up.
Well, and they're just dying to do it. They're just waiting for him to do
something
else.
Well, there's so many actors now that are out there that are just dying. Like you said, they're dying to do a project that was like, has some substance or is different.
And is memorable.
Right.
Although this one you cannot pronounce. Yeah.
Maybe it was an unfortunate name. But it is kind of the perfect title because it ends up being the title of the play he's making, which he could never find a title for through the whole movie.
Right.
And what was it? Can you explain the meaning of that word?
You
explained it pretty well.
It means like referring to a group as in a different context. So it's like saying when the New York Yankees win the baseball game, it's like saying, and people will say New York won, but they're not referring to New York, the city. They're referring to the baseball team.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an example sort of made me understand it. Okay.
Synecdoche.
Okay. Enough, dude. Seriously. People are going to turn it off.
People already have. This is a lost episode. Anyway, it's a great movie. So Philip Seymour Hoffman, he's a playwright and director in the movie.
Yeah.
And he gets the MacArthur Grant or something, which seems to be an unlimited amount of money to do a project of his choosing. So he decides to do this very interactive realism play in this giant warehouse in New York.
Right.
Which becomes... It sort of becomes an autobiographical play about himself, making a play about himself. Those are the very, very broad strokes. And there's sort of a guy that follows him. Do you remember that?
Yes.
First,
I remember parts.
In the first act, there's like a guy, and he's noticeable. You're like, there's a guy always following him. And he ends up coming to audition to play the part of him.
Yeah.
He's like, I've studied you my whole life.
That guy's the voice of everybody. In Anima.
In Anomalisa.
My God. Anomalisa.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't put
Tom Noom or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't put that together. Oh, that's great.
Which that voice kind of sounds like somebody like... It's like a South Park voice almost, but anyway.
Oh, yeah, it does. Right? It does. It sounds like Randy almost. But yeah, that's the broad strokes of the play. It's very well done. It's, I don't know what the budget was, but it seems like it would be a lot.
Okay. Synecdoche is a figure of speech in which a part is made to represent the whole or vice versa, as in Cleveland won by 6 runs, meaning Cleveland's baseball team.
Okay.
Like, and I guess you could say like, yeah, the whole set was sick that day.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Meaning like...
The people
that work on the set. Not the fucking set itself.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like referring to like something as a whole.
Or like...
The city is overrun.
World War II, Germany and Russia. And you're like, well, you're not talking about the entire country, or the you're talking about the specific soldiers of the army.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah,
okay. So that's okay. The meaning of it. All right. All right, okay.
Just anyway. Like just like all of his movies, you have to look stuff up to understand. Yeah. Right?
He challenges you to do a little research.
But you liked.
I liked it.
This movie.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I feel like that was 2008. I feel like at that time the meta thing was still fresh.
Well, he kind of invented.
Right. Well, meta, I wouldn't say he didn't. He didn't invent it.
He kept it alive.
He popularized it for a modern audience.
Yeah.
Which perfect. But you know, after that, I know you don't watch it, but Dan Harmon's Community does like a whole introspective thing about meta through the whole run of the show. So it's become a very common thing now. Whereas I think in 2008, it was not really a theme. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And this one is really like he, you know, by the end of it, he's got a play within a play within a play within a play. I rented the DVD, and there was like a little behind the scenes thing, and they did an interview with the script supervisor. I had my own. She showed her binder. She had like a fold out diagram that was like the size of a blueprint about like what scene numbers were within each version of the play within the play with.
Rough, dude.
Fuck, because it was all, and everything was like a different timeline. Oh my god. Oh my god. Yeah. Our brains would have fucking exploded. Anyway, do you want to move on?
Yeah.
So the next one is Anomalisa, where he wrote and directed 2015 stop motion animation.
I hadn't seen it.
For adults. I knew of it, but I hadn't seen it until just recently.
I watched it for this podcast.
Yeah. What did you think?
I loved it.
I did too. It was so weird.
So weird. Yet I got this. I think this is the movie I kind of understood.
This was accessible.
Yes. And it was, yeah, again, I don't know if he's ever talked about what the meaning of it is, but I felt like it was just being a person who's kind of bored with fucking everybody in your life.
That's totally what it is. That's totally.
And then meeting one person that changes that.
Yeah.
Right. An anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
And her name is Lisa, which means Anomalisa.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of portrayed, or that's conveyed quite well. But
yeah.
First of all, it's stop motion animation done in a very kind of different way.
They're all 3D printed.
Is that what it is?
Mouths and eyes. Did you notice there was like a break?
A line.
Along their eye line?
Yeah.
At the first, I thought he was wearing glasses.
So did I.
Because I thought those were the lines of the... But then when I actually saw the movie and the way they moved, I was like, oh, it's like a forehead piece and a mouth piece, like from the nose down to the chin.
But then his chin, like his whole face falls off. Remember that one part?
Yeah. So that's how they animated it. It was all 3D print. I saw a picture of them. They have like boxes and boxes of the mouths in all different like shapes.
Yeah.
Stop motion animation is like, we could do a whole episode about just
it's fun.
Modern stop motion.
And in a way, like, you kind of say to yourself, why do they do it? Because you could just do it on computer. I guess it's kind of like the art of it, but you've seen them actually physically do it. It's fucking crazy.
It's so crazy.
Like, it's such an art in itself. But
in when Emily and I went to Germany, they happened to have, there was a touring Wallace and Gromit exhibit.
Oh, wow.
So they had all the puppets and some of the sets.
Yeah.
From Curse of the Werewolf.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, the detail.
Oh, I know.
And they're not that small. Like,
they're quite big, the sets. They're quite
big, right? And they're all lit.
Well, because they got to get a fucking camera in there, right?
Yeah. But the way they're lit was, they had one scene where it was like, it would go from day to night. Like, they had the set, and the lighting would actually fade from day to light because they had day and light scenes.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh, my God. It's just like shooting a movie, but smaller. Miniature. Because there's all these different, like, lighting sources and...
Well, when they did Team America, I read this interview that movie for Trey Parker and Matt Stone was so fucking difficult. It almost like beat them both. Like, they didn't want to even work in film after that.
And it's all forced perspective. And
they had to hire the DP from The Matrix to help them finish it. Because Trey Parker was like, every fucking shot we do became a whole math equation.
Yeah.
And he's like, it was so difficult and we couldn't do it. And... Because they didn't really know. I mean, they knew how to write it, but they just didn't know how to execute.
Well, when you think of the idea, like, oh, we'll do marionettes, but they're like, you know, you know, they're like kind of dirty, raunchy marionettes. You're like, oh, that should be easy to shoot, right? It should be pretty cheap. Yeah. Then you're like, oh, fuck, nope.
No, but Anomalisa, to me, I loved it because I love simple stories. I love the mood that it created, the tone that it created.
Yeah.
I loved the guy. I loved how he was flawed and
super flawed.
And just the way that she stood out. And I started to notice, I was like, oh, how come they all have the same voice? And the whole thing kind of unfolded for me,
me too.
Sort of a personal way. So yeah. I was like, oh, I really like this. It was great.
Yeah. The beginning, I didn't notice. So it's the guy at the beginning of the movie, you see the guy, he gets off a plane and he's going through the airport and there's all these people. They all have the same face.
Yeah.
And voice. Yeah. They have different hair and different clothes. And
the voice sounds like a South Park.
Yeah.
It sounds like Trey Parker is doing that voice.
Yeah, it does.
Because it's like that sort of like crazy South Park voice, right?
But I liked it because he plays, so that actor plays all the other characters.
Everyone.
But he doesn't do like different voices.
No.
It's like it's the same voice. For the men and the women, it's all kind of like...
But then it kind of toys with you. And then his son even has that voice.
Yeah.
Like the child.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I felt like it kind of separated you from everybody.
Yeah.
In that show. Like it sort of made you feel this sort of bland feeling towards everybody else. But then when you saw Lisa for the first time, you're like, oh, she doesn't have that voice.
Yeah.
And then you sort of just fall into them. And then you realize that I don't know. It's like a love story portrayed through a certain vision that I thought was just fucking really, really.
Yeah. They really smart. Force you to see it through his eyes.
Yeah.
Right. And ears, because he hears her in the hallway before.
That's right.
He's like,
that's
oh, it's a different, like he already knows it's a different person.
Yeah.
It's somebody different. He just hears the voice. And he goes
fucking knocking for
her. He's like, oh, where? Yeah.
And at first you think he's just horny.
But then he's like so tired of everyone saying the same things and doing the same things and looking like, you know, everything is the same. And
which
then,
we all know that happens. She's to different. Us.
And it's not that she's like, you know, because in other movies, they make the Manic Pixie Dream Girl character, the Zooey Deschanel or the Meg Ryan, right? And there's like super, or the Natalie Portman in Gardenscape, where they're like super quirky and like out there and they ride a Vespa. And it's like, no, she's kind of not eccentric. She's just different.
And her face was just scarred. She's just
different. Yeah. I think it was a downplay on that kind of idea, right?
It just, to him, she just sounded different. And remember, he kept asking her to talk.
Yeah. And he's like, no, just keep talking.
Although that sex scene kind of like disturbed me a bit.
Because it's stop motion? Or because it felt real?
It felt so real, dude. Like
that was awkward.
That was the realest sex scene I've ever watched.
And man. It wasn't even real people.
Exactly. How did they achieve that, man? Oh, dude. Like, it was so fucking like, I've never seen a more natural sex scene than that.
Yeah.
And as everyone in the world, we've all seen our fair share of different levels of sex scenes.
Yeah.
And like, good God, like when I'm watching it, I felt like I was like, should I fast forward this? Because
you're like, I shouldn't be.
This is none of my business.
It's, right? it's like you just walked in the room. You're like, oh, sorry.
Oh my God. People are having intercourse.
I thought this was a movie about things that weren't sex. Okay.
You know, the way their legs were, like the way they looked and everything. Oh my God.
Well, the puppets were very hyper realistic.
They were, but they all kind of were short. They were all kind of frumpy.
Yeah.
Which I liked because it made them kind of like the INT Barbie or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. They weren't like Jack Skellington's.
No, or they weren't like leggy and, you know, beautiful. Yeah, yeah. They were like flawed and people more. Yeah. And it was, it was good. What a great movie. God.
Yeah, it was really good.
And then at the end it was, I don't want to give it away, but it just didn't. And then it kind of got bizarre when he like gets called to go downstairs and then you find out that he's this author of this book. Like there's all these things unfold because at first you don't know that he's famous. That kind of unfolds, right?
Yeah,
I don't know, it was just so well done.
It was well done.
And I like Charlie Kaufman too because he just goes different ways. Like there's no know, like I mean he you know it's him because it's so existential and thinking pieces and stuff like that,
yeah,
but you don't, it's not like Michael Bay or, you know what I mean? He doesn't go like the same fucking stupid shit every time. He goes different ways.
Yeah.
He writes little different stories and they're all about people and they're just fucking great, man.
They're all real. Down to earth.
Yeah.
Right. They're based in reality, but then they have a weird sci-fi or supernatural or psychological spin, but he's got a good balance between humor and like drama. You know, and they're very cerebral. Like they make you think, and they make you feel too.
Yeah,
he's got talent.
Yeah, he really does. Even the way Lisa, like you liked her so much. Like even the way she was, you felt bad for her because she was seemed like. I mean, they didn't have too much of a chance to sort of develop any of those characters really. Although they were like you felt like you knew them, but
yeah,
you kind of felt bad for her because they're like she's like, oh, well, we saved up money and took a trip and. Nobody ever liked her and they always liked the friend and whatever, right? And I don't know. It's just what a concept. That guy. Like what a mind, eh? What a fucking mind. Brilliant mind.
I just and I love the choice to do that as a stop motion film. It's actually a stage play that he wrote.
Oh really?
Years before.
Yeah, it would have worked as a play too, right? Eh?
Because it's kinda like it's all set in the hotel basically.
Yeah.
Like in the room in the
they never leave
the bar.
They never leave the hotel premise.
But it's really cool that he was like...
Although I guess then they go to his house, but...
Yeah, I want to do it stop motion. Scene. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Kind of works, right? Because at first you think it's a gimmick.
Yeah.
But then like we had just said, it's like it kind of makes you really understand what the character's thinking.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Anyway, the one he did after that was I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Which we've already talked about. He wrote another film that's coming out next year called Chaos Walking. And that one's been in development for a long time.
I hope that Netflix just gives him money. This is my calling card to Netflix. They just need to hire us, me and you, to yay or nay projects.
Right.
It's so easy.
And we can do it on the podcast.
I could do it on the side. Just send me the list of what you're thinking and I'll tell you. What you should do and shouldn't do. I can tell you right away.
It's interesting, like, how we had the studio system in the 40s where they would, like, contract actors and directors, right? And then that kind of fell apart. People broke away from that. But it's almost like I kind of almost want them to go back to that. To be like, can you just sign Charlie Kaufman for 10 years and make him make 5 movies, write and direct, carte blanche, just let him do his thing.
Yeah. And don't.
And just don't worry about it.
Well, because it doesn't matter. Like, box office shit doesn't matter now, right?
No. As long as you're retaining viewership, like, as long as people are not unsubscribing from Netflix, Netflix is making money.
Or maybe Amazon should be the one to do it because they seem to be the ones that are kind of going more that direction.
Well, fucking Jeff Bezos could give Charlie Kaufman
boy.
$30 billion and he could make pocket a real. Change. Sindedosh, New York, of his own.
I can't say it again.
An interactive Charlie Kaufman play in New York City.
VR.
Oh.
That's what apparently theater is talking about doing some VR shit. Like
who is?
Theater, like around
the
world, yeah.
Oh, so like you'd be able to watch a movie or a stage play.
On your VR. Like
look
back yeah, and forth and you stage. Just attend that way. Like you just watch a play in VR. And I'm like, I'm down. I have an Oculus Rift or Quest.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, why not?
They're kind of weird, though. It kind of makes me feel nauseous.
I don't think I could do it.
There's one game I have where you got to kill zombies, and I'm like, I can't play
this. Oh, God. I can't even play, like, some of the video games that I play just on a TV.
Right? Yeah.
What if I put headphones on? Too scary.
Fair enough.
Because the audio is all surround sound, right?
Remember the game Manhunt?
No.
Oh, it's like an old school PS3 game, I think, or two. And it was fucking, you had to like kill people. Anyways.
Oh, man. I tried playing Bioshock with headphones on once, and it's like you can hear like the enemies taunt you, but you can hear them. They're like way behind, like far away and echoey. And you're like, what the fuck?
Do you think they'll ever approach Charlie Kaufman to direct the Bioshock movie?
Dude, it would be great if he did that. Have you played that movie, that show, or that game?
Have I played that theater play? No, yeah. I haven't.
Have you played that game? It's fucking awesome. The one more thing about Charlie Kaufman that I didn't know until last night. He released his debut novel this year.
Oh, really?
Called Ant Kind, if you're an avid reader.
Like A-N-T or A-U-N-T?
Like ant. Like mankind, but with ants.
Oh.
I don't know what it's about, but I'm probably going to go pick it up, because if it's anything like his scripts, I'm going to enjoy it.
Well, he's came a out talented
in,
writer.
I don't came see out why in he's July, but I haven't been to the bookstore since March because of what? COVID.
You haven't been to like... Oh, what's the bookstore you go to?
Black Burger? Bond. Black Bond Book down there. Book Warehouse.
I go to fucking Indigo sometimes.
What did you say, Book Burger?
Book Burger. No, you ever been to a Book Burger? It's a place where you go and read books and you get a big old burger.
Dude, I would be there every day.
You get a big old they
would
double have, cheese.
It would be like a table with like a glass box that you put the book in so that you can eat the burger and the burger can drip as much as it wants and it wouldn't get on the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I like where you're going with this.
Brilliant.
Book Burger.
Book Burger.
Okay, bro.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. And for anybody out, any of our fans, just, you know, the movies that we just talked about are really great. So if you're bored,
there's not give them a bad. There's not a the only one I haven't seen on this list is Human Nature. And honestly, all the other ones I would recommend.
Yeah,
I'd recommend all of them.
Quality,
well worth the time.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks to Dan for our music and Amanda for our graphics. Thanks to everyone who's been listening. I'm Clayton.
I'm Jordy.
This has been the Props Cast.
Bye.
Thinking of ending this podcast.